morning. I want to welcome you all to the Capitol and the Court Room this morning for our first session of oral arguments in March. We are expecting some high school students, but they're looking for parking at the moment. And they may come while you're talking, and I don't want you to, I want you to know what the disturbance will be. And you would know that the students are here with our Courtless Class, which is a national award-winning program sponsored by the court and of the state bar. The students have been sent materials about the case that you're about to present. They may have engaged in activities relating to that case. And at noon, after our second oral argument, they will be meeting with Justice Gableman, who's been assigned today to meet with the students. So with that introduction, I'll call our first case, 09AP2845-W. Madison Metropolitan School District versus Circuit Court for Dane County. Arguing on behalf of the Circuit Court for Dane County is Attorney Bruce Meredith. Mr. Meredith.
Thank you, Your Honor. At issue in this case is whether a circuit court has any authority to order a school district to provide some form of educational services to an expelled student if the circuit court concludes that the services are required by the Juvenile Justice Code dispositional criteria. The circuit court contends that it has the discretion to order a school to provide some level of educational services, but recognizes that the ordered services must be carefully tailored to address school district concerns. This case arose when the circuit court sought to develop a dispositional order for a juvenile who had been expelled from a Madison high school for possession of marijuana under circumstances suggesting a sale. The circuit court concluded an effective dispositional order required some educational services, but the district offered none. The district does not dispute that the juvenile was entitled to district-provided educational services if he were placed in a juvenile detention center, but the circuit court found that there was no basis under the code to remove the juvenile from his home. Finding no district flexibility, the circuit court ordered the district to appear at a show-cause hearing. The district appeared at the hearing through its attorney and deputy superintendent. At no time did it object to the circuit court's personal jurisdiction, nor did it offer any evidence regarding any administrative, safety, or financial barriers to providing some form of supplemental education.
Counsel, you indicate there was no evidence of financial barriers. When preparing for this case, I thought to myself, what's this case about? What's is it the circuit court in a... I'm trying to choose my words judiciously. In a dispute with the district as to power and authority, is it money? The reason I asked that, I thought, you know, as a circuit court judge, when I was a circuit court judge in Marathon County, if I would have had this case, likely this juvenile would have been going to what we have in Marathon County in Wausau, but all over the state, an alternative high school, a separate entity that's provided for in the statutes, a private entity, we call it storefront, but the kid would go there. Or the juvenile would be going to, again, as provided for in the statute, a program through the technical college where you get your degree or you can get, your equivalency for a high school degree. And so why is it, are we with such an either or here? The court can do it or the court can't do it. What about those multitude of services available at least in 71 counties throughout the state, maybe not in Madison and Dane County?
Well, I'd make two responses. First, Your Honor, you're correct. As the DPI data shows, almost half the school districts provide post-expulsion services, and they're even provided in the Madison School District. I don't think the case is about money, other than the fact it might be about whose money, because certainly if the the circuit court chose to place the juvenile in detention center, the cost would have been extremely high. It wouldn't have been the school district's money, but it certainly would have been the taxpayers' money.
Yes, but I don't know the answer to this, but I've dealt with financial issues involving schools in my past life in terms of who pays, you know, whose turf is it. I mean, if a student is placed in an alternative setting, like an alternative high school or, say, under the statute in one of the technical school programs, and I'm not talking about an employment program but rather a high school degree or equivalency degree program, who pays for that? Doesn't that come out of the school district's money?
It's the resident school district, yes.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, I don't know why this case became so stark. I guess the district could answer that question, but certainly the judge, if you follow the transcript, was just saying, give me something to work with here. I just want something to work with, and the district chose to make it a very stark issue of we have the power, you don't.
Mr. Meredith, does it make any difference whether or not we treat this as an appeal or a supervisory writ?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I think in some cases it could be problematic, but what the Court of Appeals did here, even though we think they paid short shrift to the standard, was the district argued the case as a pure question of law. It didn't present any evidence. And so the Court decided to treat it as a pure question of law. And so while I disagree with the method they use, it's clear this Court can hear this case. That doesn't bar jurisdiction. And it's also completely consistent with how the district argued the case.
You do take the position, though, that supervisory writ was not the right way to go?
I do not believe there was extraordinary hardship here, Your Honor.
Counsel, how old was the student at the time he was expelled?
I believe he was 15, turning on 16, if I calculate back, but my math could be a little off.
And the reason behind the order to expel the student was the attempted, or at least the possession of marijuana. I believe there were 9 individual baggies that he brought to Madison East High School,
yes,
which indicated circumstances with an intent to distribute the marijuana.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the record indicate whether the circuit court considered any alternative means of furthering the student's educational needs besides ordering the school district, which had just expelled the student, to provide educational services?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the record shows the court was looking at every available option and actually did not want this battle to occur. For some reason, the district took the position that the child could not receive any education whatsoever on the district property and just took a very hard-line position.
Well, I think they took that position because they had just expelled the student. But my question runs to, does the record indicate that the circuit court considered ordering perhaps an independent course of study with the juvenile reporting to the social worker, the juvenile's efforts to maintain and further some kind of education?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the judge did. In fact, the judge made a specific factual finding, which hasn't been challenged, that the district offered no alternatives to him whatsoever.
But leaving the district aside, this student who's 16 years old, you know, may have the ability, one conjectures, to go out and do some activities on his own to further his own education without ordering the school district, which had just expelled him, to provide education services.
Well, Your Honor, the judge made his recommendation. There's a social work report in it based on the individual assessment of the social worker. And if you read that report, the social worker just checked all the possible alternatives and kept saying they're not working for this kid, they're not working for this kid. The judge considered, you know, private tutoring, but the mother said, we don't have any money. So what you saw in this case was a circuit court judge's attempt to find every available avenue, but simply was not able.
Besides private tutoring, what else does the record indicate was considered?
Well, they tried finding work, a job placement for the child, but they were unable to get that. The judge looked at a number of options. But, Your Honor, another way of looking at your point is I think what you're basically asking is...
I think sometimes people confuse questions from the bench with points.
Okay.
I'm merely asking a question to figure out if alternatives to avoiding this rather unusual question were considered.
Sure, Your Honor. I think another way of your question, another way to respond to your question is that they're hitting at, did the judge abuse his discretion? Did he do enough? And I think in general that has to be judged under an abuse of discretion standard. And I don't believe there's any suggestion that the judge abused his discretion. I mean, he did a lot here. He even went and got DPI data. There might be one stone left unturned, but I don't think that's a basis to reject the judge's handling of
it. What I hear from both Justice Bradley and Justice Gableman, which doesn't mean that's what they intend, but that's what I hear, is the school district was unwilling to do anything for this student. And the questioning is, were there any alternatives in the Madison Metro School District? And apparently the answer to that is no.
Well, I
believe... Right? I mean, was there a charter school? Was there a homeschool provision that he could have gone? Not no, his home, apparently. And the answer seems to be no. There was nothing offered in the Madison Metro School District for this child. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, I actually believe there are programs the Madison School District could have chosen, but they took the position in this class that under their internal policies and procedures, this child was not eligible.
Okay. So the answer to the question, was Madison Metro School District offering anything for this youngster? The answer is they were not.
Yes.
Is that right?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
They could have, but they didn't.
Yeah.
They might have, but they won't. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, can the judge, has the authority to make a plan,
right? Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So if the judge said this child should be educated, which makes sense to me, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Why can't the judge say we're going to have education in another way? Private tutor, okay. The parents can't pay. Why can't the county pay?
Well, Your Honor, I think the reason the judge chose this route.
Well, I want to know whether or not the judge could have ordered tutoring 2 hours a day or an educational program 2 hours a day that the judge set up himself and get someone else to pay. Social services, county social services, the county Treasury.
Well, I believe the judge may have had that authority, but the authority is much more easily expressed in the statutes by requiring the district in which the child resides to have certain educational programs. And so I think the judge just went with the simplest flow of the statutes.
I can understand that, and the judge may not have been in any position to decide what the curriculum for this child should have been if he ordered that. But I just can't help but feel that this case is a question of who's going to pay. Madison school system, who has shorter money, and now you want a one-on-one relationship. That's what the judge is really ordering.
Well, Your Honor,
possibility.
Your Honor, I believe the judge ordered that, but the order came somewhat out of frustration, and I guess the circuit courts are human beings, and they kept asking the district, give me something, give me something. And so what he did is went to, well, if I sent the kid to juvenile detention, he would get this. So certainly if the district's going to pay for that, they should pay for this. And
I understand that, but it's a money issue. That's what's the issue to me. Who pays?
Well, I would like to address, I do think the money issues, I don't think are particularly extravagant in this case. Unfortunately, there's no real hard record on it. But there is a question of who's going to pay because the cost of failed rehabilitation is enormous. So I think more important than the question of who's paying in this particular – is the district going to have to spend a small amount of funds? What the judge is supposed to do under the Juvenile Justice Code is act as an umpire and say, this money needs to be spent for the juvenile at this particular time because it's what the code requires and it meets all the requirements of the judicial code. It protects the public. It holds the child accountable. And it rehabilitates the juvenile. So,
Counselor, is there anything in the record that would tell us why the Horizon School or Shabazz School was not offered for this child? They're both in Madison. They both operate on a daily basis. Is there anything that would tell us about that?
Not in this record. The district chose to present the case as a pure abstract question of power. And that's what we're left with, Your Honor. It's unfortunate, but that's what we're left with.
If this juvenile were in a detention facility, the juvenile would be educated, right?
Yes.
Okay. So this kind of falls in the cracks a little bit because this juvenile doesn't qualify, if you will, to be in a detention facility, but is rather at home, right?
Right.
Yeah. Here's the practical issue. There are a lot of kids who would love nothing more than to be out of school and not have to go, right?
Yes,
I mean,
Your
I've
Honor.
Seen them. I've dealt with them. They may be really smart, but for whatever reason, it isn't a good fit. And they'd like their own educational program developed for their world the way they would like it to happen. So how do we decide this case so we aren't necessarily rewarding every time somebody wants to learn in school? You know what? You want to have your own educational system, somebody will pay for it. All you have to do is go deal drugs in school, and then it'll be the court's responsibility to either have a county pay or the school district pay. I mean, help me out with the practical reality of what happens. And I'm not saying every kid does that, but there are a good number of them who would prefer not to go to a traditional school.
Yes,
and they don't want to be in jail.
Well, first of all, to answer your question, the detention center, not only does a child get an education, the district pays for the education. But with your other question, the district attorney actually was one of the forceful advocates for that, making exactly your point. He said, look, let this kid on unstructured and on the street, that's what he wants, and he's just going to give a greater opportunity to do more harm. It's not holding the juvenile accountable. So interestingly enough, the arguments in advance supported for the judge were made by the district attorney precisely for the point you're making. He didn't want to give the kid a break. He wanted the kid to actually have structure and have to learn something. So
how do we not reward that behavior? You don't really want to go to the traditional school. You don't qualify for being held in a detention facility for whatever reason, or the judge just determines that's not the right spot for you. What do you want this court to say to trial court judges so they know here's what I need to do when I'm presented with this situation and here's who pays?
Well, Your Honor, our requested solution is that, first of all, the Juvenile Justice Code vests a lot of discretion in circuit court judges. And the court should honor that discretion because they're on the ground. They got the individualized report. The parties are there. They're the best person to make the call. But we also agree that what's necessary is to tell courts, yes, you do have some authority to provide education to juveniles where you feel the code demands it, regardless of whether they're expelled. But if they're expelled, you have to have several markers. You should be very careful to honor the district's legitimate concerns about cost, safety, administrative inconvenience. And then hopefully if the judge does have some power, and the school district also has some power in this, good solutions will emerge. Now, they're not ideal solutions, but good solutions.
Do you think the judge could have done almost a reverse Huber kind of situation? You go to jail to be educated, and you can go home at night?
Well, as I read the record, the code places pretty exacting requirements on taking a child out of home.
I understand that. I've done that. But I'm saying the placement's at home, but here's where you can get your education.
Well, I guess my...
What do you think of that idea?
I guess my comment would be the same I made to Justice Gableman. It's possible to find a few stones the judge didn't turn over, but I think if you look at this record, you have a judge that was doing everything possible to find a way out of this problem and was simply being boxed in. And
what if instead it was the juvenile who said, you know, I don't like going to the Phoenix Academy. I want a different place to go to. It doesn't fit. Or does something, you know, deals drugs there, and they say, you can't come back here. Look, that's poison in our situation. You can't come back here. So do you just keep going and going and going until you find something the juvenile likes? Is that what a judge is supposed to do? I mean, it's always better they're educated. We all agree that is the best possible remedy. But their kids are smart. I'm telling you, every time you think you got it figured out, they have a new answer to why your solution won't work. So help me out. What is the rule we give judges so they know what's enough?
Give them the necessary discretion and the necessary power to allow them to when they're dealing with the wide array of parties before them in a juvenile justice code, to find the most sensible solution. And not all the solutions will be the best solutions because, in fact, as you know, juvenile justice is a very difficult area, and some children are just particularly wily or particularly
smart.
Yes.
Really smart.
So you indicated earlier that one of the possibilities the circuit court explored was a jobs placement.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does Dane County have a juvenile offender community service program?
I believe the social workers report is exhibit record number 10. And that sort of goes through all the things the social worker tried doing. And there is a jobs program, but there was...
So my question, does Dane County have a juvenile offender community service program?
I don't know if they have exactly that, but the social workers report indicated they have something very similar.
Because I certainly know, as the former trial court judge of Burnett County, that one of the options available would have had this offender, this juvenile offender, go to work. Go to work for the elderly or for one of the municipalities and do community service under the supervision of a responsible individual in coordination with the social worker. So I'm not quite as convinced that it's as stark a choice as perhaps it has been presented.
Your Honor, I certainly agree that it should not have been as stark a choice as presented. The district wasn't willing to provide anything, and the judge could find no options in the time available.
Mr. Meredith, if you think the judge has power, you've got to get it from somewhere. You're going to get it from a statute, a regulation, the Constitution, which would be inherent. You've got to have some basis. It has to be tethered to something. What are you tethering it to?
Well, I noticed that my warning light came on, but I do believe that there are two bases for the judge's authority. The first is that everyone agrees that an expelled student is entitled to an educational plan. Now, what the parties disagree about is whether the plan has to say anything. The Court of Appeals found it could
just be... What statute is that?
938.33.1.
Okay.
And... So the first thing is, what should that plan be? And a common definition of the term plan is a program, method, or scheme worked out ahead of time to accomplish an objective. So what should be the objective of a plan under the Juvenile Justice Code? The most obvious one, it accomplishes the goals of the code, a plan that protects public safety, holds the juvenile accountable, and increases the juvenile skills and competencies. A plan exactly like the one adopted by the circuit court. By contrast, if it's simply a mere status report, that will actually provide nothing, and as noted by Justice Ziegler, may in fact increase potential difficulties because the juvenile is in fact getting his way. So I believe the definition of a plan strongly reinforces the judge's ability to order some actual educational services. In fact, you could even look at it an alternative way. I believe the district has an obligation to give the court a workable plan, not just a theoretical plan, but a workable plan, and that was not done in this case.
Look, the court shall designate an agency as defined in 938.31.1 to submit a report. What agency was designated by the judge?
I believe St. County Social Services.
Okay. And what did they say?
Well, what they said is that the child needed to go to school without fail, needed some program but they were unable to find a program given the district's position.
1E says that they're to make a plan for the provision of educational services after consultation with the staff of the school in which the juvenile is enrolled or the last school in which he was enrolled. So they attempt to do that?
Well, they did respond to the phone call, but essentially the district's position was once you're expelled, we're not entitled to anything.
So they consulted and the answer was zero.
Zero.
Okay. All right. Then what do they do? I mean, we have to follow the statutes.
I agree,
I'm asking you, what's your basis? Okay.
And the second statutory provision is in 118.12.18. And 938.34.7D.
Okay.
And
what do they say?
And in 120.12.18 on its face said the purpose of this statute is to give judges powers over schools to provide court-ordered education. That was the general purpose of that provision, and it specifically used the term like including but not limited to, suggesting that the court authority was broad. 938.34.7D1 allows the court to order a juvenile to attend a non-residential program provided by the school district in which the juvenile resides. It does not say enroll. It says resides. And in addition, if you go down to subsection 4D, that provision specifically excludes disabled students from the provision's reach, but says nothing about expelled students. So we believe these provisions can be fairly read to support the circuit court's order. I notice my time is up. If the court would
I'd like you to respond, finish the response to the question, please. I'd like you to finish the response to my question, please.
Yes, Your Honor. So we believe these several statutes mentioned, both 938.33.1E, 120.12.18, 938.34.7D, all can be read to give the judge this power. And we believe that in this case, because of the way this Juvenile Justice Code was written, vesting so much authority in the circuit court, that any ambiguity in these statutes should be interpreted in support of allowing the judge to have discretionary authority.
But there's also a statute that allows the school district to expel a student, right?
You're correct, Your Honor.
And so your problem here is you've got statutes that foster education of a child who's under the Juvenile Justice Code, right? But you got a statute that, or a series of statutes that give the school district authority of who gets into school and how long they stay. And that's, so you have a competing statutes.
Exactly right, Your Honor.
Okay. And you want to balance them in favor of the power of the judge.
I want to balance them in favor of the power of the judge. But I also believe they should be harmonized whenever possible. And I do believe the judge's handling of this case points to a way these statutes can be harmonized that says, yes, the judge does have limited power in certain circumstances based on the individual criteria of the juvenile before him, but the school also has interests to protect the integrity of its expulsion process. And to the extent possible, this court should adopt a construction that gives each its due.
I have problems about how you're interpreting 938.34.7D, because it doesn't say the court shall order education. It gives you five ways of entering into a contractual agreement. Well, and if the school district doesn't want to do it, doesn't force the school district to enter into a contract?
Well, four of them were contractual agreements.
All right.
The first
is not.
What about
the first one? A non-residential educational program, including one for children at risk, provided by the school district.
Yes.
Is that what he ordered?
Yes, Your Honor. That is effectively what he ordered. He ordered.
What do you mean effectively?
The judge ordered that the district provide supplemental education services in a manner it deemed appropriate.
Is that a non-residential educational program provided by the school district?
A residential generally refers to where the child is taken out of the home. The child was in the home and receiving district-provided education.
Mm-hmm.
Your Honor, the circuit court agrees that the statutes are ambiguous, and they can be read both ways.
All
compelling
right.
arguments can be made both ways, but we believe effective resolution favors the circuit court's order. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Meredith, and you will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Thank you. Matthew William Bell, Attorney Bell, representing the Madison Metropolitan School District.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Bell, and I am Associate General Counsel for the Madison Metropolitan School District. On June 5, 2009, MDT, the juvenile involved in this matter, brought 9 individually wrapped bags of marijuana to a district campus. After a full hearing before an independent hearing officer and the Madison Metropolitan School District Board of Education, he was expelled for the possession with intent to distribute marijuana on a district campus. It was further decided that MDT's behavior threatened the health or safety of the student population, which further went into the determination to expel. Notably, he was expelled without educational services.
Counsel, it is that very phrase, without educational services, that causes me to interrupt you at this early stage in your comments. You indicated that there was a hearing examiner that issued an order dated July 12, 2009, expelling him, and then the Madison School Board reviewed that and modified the order. And the modification, at least in part, appears in the first, number one, under the modified order. And it has added language that did not appear, and I'm looking at appendix page 9, respondents appendix page 9. It had language, added language, modified language that did not appear in the order of the hearing examiner. And that language indicates, initially as a preface, that the juvenile is to be expelled, and then this is the added language, with off-campus neutral site programming. What does be expelled with off-campus neutral site programming mean?
Essentially what that means, Your Honor, is that the student was expelled towards the end of the, let me get my dates right, the 9-10 school year. And he had been going to school, receiving services pursuant to the normal school day, and therefore he was well down the tracks on getting credit for those particular classes that he'd been taking. This modified order allowed the student to end those classes, to take his final exams, so that he doesn't lose an entire semester's worth of credit.
Well, this modified order goes on right after the language that I read, the language with off-campus neutral site programming, including the provision of homework assignments and the opportunity to complete the assignments and have them graded, was the added language. Then it says, and then it is the opportunity to take the final exams. So the opportunity to take the final exams, that language appears in the order of the hearing examiner. It is this new stuff with off-campus neutral site programming that is unclear to me what it refers to.
That off-site, off-campus neutral site programming is, as it says, it's services that are provided not on a district campus. They may be provided at a community center. They may be provided at times we have had them provided at a local jail. They may be provided at a library.
How am I to know what this refers to? Does it refer to, as you're suggesting, only with regard to the opportunity to study for his final exams for the academic year 2008-2009, or does it mean something else?
That's a general provision that's put in many expulsion orders allowing students to finish out the semester, depending on how far they are into the semester, allowing them to finish the semester and receive credit for that semester. These are fairly common within the MMSD. I can certainly understand where it would cause confusion to someone outside of the school district.
I'm just reading it for what it says, not with the background that it's common. It wasn't in the hearing officer's order. So to that extent, it's not uniform or not common. But when I read that, I thought, with off-campus neutral site programming, well, why are we here then if that's what they've ordered?
Again, that's a common practice to allow students to finish out the semester they're in. However, after that semester, then the expulsion, which we deem to be complete cessation of services, would take effect, and the student would then no longer be able to receive educational services for the term of the expulsion, unless early readmittance was allowed.
In fact, that's one of the interpretation issues here, whether expulsion from school is set forth in the statute means expulsion from all educational opportunity. And as I understand, you interpret that statute that refers to expulsion from school as meaning that there's no, that's expulsion from, as I said, opportunity for educational services provided by or through the district.
Your Honor, it's expulsion, because it's not defined anywhere in the statute, it's given its common ordinary meaning. And its ordinary meaning is that you are essentially kicked out. You are not allowed the benefit of the organization or the entity. I believe that that particular definition of expulsion is supported by both case law, which clearly has held that there is no right to continue with educational services once an expulsion has been provided. It's also supported by DPI interpretation.
I read that too, but I'm not sure. And I'm referring to, I guess, 120.13 school board powers, and then when you get to C1, the school board may expel a pupil from school whenever it finds that the pupil has engaged in certain conduct. Mm-hmm. Other than the, what was it, maybe in the late 1980s, the DPI reviewed a case out of Wisconsin Rapids and said that it was educational services and not just school. What cases do you cite for the premise that our court has interpreted that in this fashion?
Well, I cite to two federal cases.
But our court I'm talking about.
This court, I don't believe, has ruled on that particular issue.
So you say the school board may expel a pupil from school really means from the opportunity for any educational services.
Yes, Your Honor.
And not just from the school building or the school environment. Mm-hmm. And you rely on that late 1980s case that came out of Wisconsin, not case, the late 1980 review by DPI that came out of a Wisconsin Rapids case. Is that it?
That as well, Your Honor, as the Wisconsin statutes themselves. For example, 120.13.1b5, which requires students who are suspended to be allowed to take exams and complete coursework, yet no similar provision for expelled students. The district reads that to mean that suspended students have a right to continue, expelled students do not. I further take Wisconsin Statute 120.13.1c2m to support our proposition.
Let me stop with the sub 5, the one that you just mentioned, before you get to the M. Sub 5 says a pupil suspended under this paragraph shall not be denied the opportunity to take any quarterly, semester, or grading period examination or to complete coursework missed during the suspension period as provided in the attendance policy. Well, isn't that exactly what you said that they've done here with regard to expulsion? So I don't know what difference there is between sub 5 for suspension, which is you can take your final exam.
The district went above and beyond what they were required to do by allowing this particular expelled student to take his exams and finish his coursework. We have no obligation to do that. We went above and beyond providing him that opportunity. But pursuant to the statute, an expelled student does not have any of those same protections in terms of being taking quarterly, semester, or grading period examinations. So, therefore, we construe that as an argument that the legislature acknowledged that suspended students have the right to, again, we provided the discretionary ability to, but suspended students have the right to, expelled students do not. I further cite to Wisconsin Statute 120.13.1F, which allows a school board to outright deny enrollment to any student expelled by another district to support our assertion that expulsion means cessation of educational services as well as being prohibited from being within the school environment.
I have two questions. One, does that mean that the school board cannot make any exceptions, these statutes?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I would point to a recent program that our district has implemented, which I believe was referenced by Justice Ziegler, that the Phoenix program, which is what we are considering an abeyance program, and it's exception to expulsion. So certainly we do have the discretion to go beyond the statute, provide more than what's required, and we often do.
And do you have a criteria for the exercise of that discretion?
With regard to the Phoenix program, the newly developed program, we absolutely...
What about any programs that were in existence at the time of this expulsion?
We do. And one of the arguments that has been made here is that we provided nothing. I believe in the correspondence between the circuit court and the district, we specifically said that we have procedures and policies in place. We apply them consistently to all students to avoid any sort of inappropriate use of discretion. And that's why the student was not allowed to continue with educational services. So we absolutely do have policies and procedures in place for when and if we provide educational services.
And why was no educational service provided to this student under your policy?
Your Honor, this student, quite simply, dealt drugs in school. He was expelled. And I have to quibble with the statement that we provided nothing. Very clearly on the record, we offered curriculum materials to the court at the show cause hearing. That was not taken kindly by the court and rejected. So I do not agree that we offered nothing. But in terms of the program, the policies, the procedures that were in place at the time of this student's expulsion, we had a consistent policy. We had a code of conduct. Dealing drugs was an expellable offense. We went through an independent hearing officer. We went through the board. And the student's right to educational services was ceased.
As I read the briefs and understand the argument of the circuit court judge and Mr. Meredith, they are not questioning the expulsion. That no one here is questioning that the expulsion was properly done, good cause, hearing. No one's questioning that. What they're questioning is, what do you do with this youngster in terms of education in the interim in which he has been expelled? So unless I'm wrong about that, but if I am wrong, Mr. Meredith will tell us when it's his turn. We're interpreting a statute, or statutes, right? And Mr. Meredith gave us the statutes that favor the judicial power and under the statutes, and you're giving us the statutes that favor the school board power. this case, therefore, is going to affect more than the young person involved here, right? And it's going to affect more than the Madison School District, right?
Certainly.
I don't see any briefs from anyone else. I don't see any amicus briefs from Association of School Districts. Aren't they involved? Don't they care? Don't you know?
I don't think I can speak to others' motivations.
I understand that.
But it's not for my lack of effort of trying.
I understand that, too. But this case just affects all the school districts potentially.
Your Honor, I think, at the risk of sounding overly dramatic, I think that this, should the circuit court's decision be allowed to stand, it would have dire consequences for school districts all across our state.
Why?
I think the primary concern is that there are no boundaries. The circuit court isn't required to consider the interests of the school. What's best for the school, as the school board must do. The circuit court has no boundaries with regard to how many hours. In this particular case, 10 hours was ordered. Why not 20?
10 hours per week?
Per week, yes, Your Honor.
2 hours per day?
Certainly, yes. Why not 20? Why not 40? Why not really develop the students' competencies and order 60? There are no boundaries. I do not believe that it's hyperbole that if this decision is to stand, drug dealers, students who assault their classmates and their teachers, and students who commit other criminal acts will be placed back in school.
I don't understand how this case is here right now. The circuit court judge sent the letter to the school district saying, among another things, you know, can you give us something that is at least what he might get if he were in detention? This is after the order to show cause. And the letter came back from the school district, we'll give 2 hours a day, and the circuit court judge said, fine, that's good enough with me. Why didn't the case end there? I see the letter initially in response to the judge, other than you have a right to appeal and all that sort of stuff, but why didn't the case end there? You, in your initial response to the judge on October 4th, you talk about your systems and policies, and you say, however, our systems, our policies and systems do not currently provide for the type of services for expelled students as envisioned in your letter. I'm paraphrasing. But not to worry, court. The school district is considering changes in the expulsion process, some of which have already been made. And it's our goal to increase and develop options and all this sort of stuff. So my guess is you've got stuff now that you didn't have a year and a half ago or 2 years ago that would have taken care of this situation. So why are we here? Is it merely who, you know, this was going to end 2 hours a day, and that was what was suggested by the school district. I understand under an order of the court to come up with something, but that's what you came up with. After the first semester, this juvenile was back in school rather than the full 3 semesters. So why are we here? Doesn't sound like it's a matter of money. I thought this was going to be a matter of money because my experience was consistently based on turf war, who pays. You haven't made a record for money. There was no record in order to show cause proceeding for money. So this isn't about money, you're saying. So this is just about who can flex the muscle the strongest? What is it about?
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to address your question in kind of a sequence. I do believe that financial considerations, when dealing with providing services, unfortunately, that is always a consideration. And I believe that yet to be another dire consequence of this ruling. We don't have the systems in place. We don't have the money, the staff, the setting, any of that. We just do not have that. So I do believe there is a corollary argument that there is a financial consideration. But the true question of why are we here today is the at its base, the question of authority.
At its base, the question of
the
what?
The question of authority.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have put measures in place. If this case were to come before, if MDT's case were to come before the circuit court today, that student would be in, would not be expelled. He would be most likely in an abeyance program that we implemented at the beginning of this academic year. We would not be here. However, our abeyance program that we have put into motion still has exclusionary factors. Some students, because of their behavior, will still continue to be expelled. I'm very proud of the fact that when I just checked the recent numbers on our expulsions, as of Friday of last week, we had 4 students expelled. At the same time last year, we had 25. We have drastically reduced our numbers of expulsion.
That's marvelous.
I agree, and thank you for that comment. But the reality is that some students will be expelled. We cannot allow certain students who engage in certain behaviors to be walking our halls and in our classrooms. And it is for those students that this case is about, because it is those students that the circuit court is saying, we have authority to do whatever we want without constraint, without boundaries.
You know what's kind of interesting to me? I'm thinking of this. There are two different things going on here. You have the school district's requirements and authorities under 120 and those statutes. And then you have the Juvenile Justice Code under 938 and what happens when a court enters into a dispositional order. But really, these are two separate and distinct things. And regardless of a dispositional order, it strikes me, the student should have either the same rights or not, whether they're found delinquent by a court or not. If the school decides to expel them, that's not something the court reviews and decides if that was right or wrong. If they're expelled, they either have the ability to get an education or not, and that proceeds on its own track. When someone's in the juvenile justice system for a variety of reasons, they might have a deferred prosecution, they might be placed in a treatment facility and so the DA agrees not to prosecute, they might go to trial and be found to be not delinquent, basically not guilty, they'd never be subject to a dispositional order. This is one where you have an expulsion proceeding and you have basically a finding of guilt and a dispositional order, and so that's where the rub comes in. But shouldn't a student have either the same access to education or not, regardless of whether there's a dispositional order in place? I mean, could that student who might be expelled still come to a certain circuit court and say, exercise your authority, even though you don't have the right to do a dispositional order, because I'm not subject to a dispositional order, but I'm asking injunctive relief to require the system to provide me with education. It seems to me there are a couple of things going on. This just happens to be two things that converge, and so we have that conflict of authority, if you will. But the same right should or shouldn't exist, right? Depending on it, regardless of whether someone's found delinquent under the Juvenile Justice Code.
Your Honor, if I understood your question correctly, I do believe that there is other avenues for a juvenile who is expelled without educational services to walk into a court and make arguments that their constitutional right, which has been suspended, should be reinstated. However, I think the legal theories under which that juvenile could walk into court are very different than a dispositional order such as the circuit court has rendered here. Those theories might be due process of law, constitutional claims. I could certainly think of an example where an expulsion order may be egregious. A school board may go overboard and the punishment doesn't fit the crime. In those avenues, I agree with Your Honor that certainly a student could seek those remedies. But
what would the burden? I mean, what's the burden? The kid should have the same right to education, regardless of whether they're found guilty or not guilty. And it almost seems like under this scenario, they're going to have increased rights if they're found guilty.
Certainly, Your Honor, I think the system or the The ruling established by the circuit court in this case does seem to cause a perverse incentive whereby the student who engages in the criminal behavior or the more criminal behavior that brings them before the court may have their right to education reinstated, whereas the student who is expelled but yet does not, their behavior does not rise to a criminal level, gets nothing. So I think that that's yet another reason why the circuit court's decision should not stand, because of that dichotomy that's created that actually rewards criminal behavior.
Well, what should the judge have done here? Kid needs to be educated, right, whether he wants it or not. It's important for rehabilitation. It's important within the juvenile justice code. Let's assume, I believe, it's the right thing to do. You, Madison Metro School District, don't want to be happy to educate him if you got the money. You got other obligations here, so you don't want to do that. What should the judge do?
Well, there was an assertion made during opposing counsel's argument that the judge had turned every stone over, that he had sought out all options. I would respectfully have to disagree with that.
Okay,
particularly because in the social worker's report, she specifically recommended homeschooling and stated that there was numerous resources available through the DPI, and that through those resources that the student could access all content areas and gain necessary skills. That recommendation was not given any thoughtful consideration at any point in the proceedings. So I do not believe that that was...
Who's going to be able to do that for this child?
Well, I can't speak generally to every juvenile, but in this case, the social worker also said that the mother did not work, was home during the day, and could provide those services.
One of the things that's amazed me about the homeschooling rules in our state is that, at least as they existed a few years ago and I was more familiar with them, they were totally and completely 100% without regulation, other than you had to go and there was a form that I request homeschooling and sign it. And once that form was filed, no one had to do anything, period. Is that still the, this was true a couple of years ago, is that still true about homeschooling, that there's no accountability, there's, because I had a lot of kids in my court, you know, that could do that, and then they wouldn't get to be truant, you know, but nothing happened at home. Their parents weren't equipped to homeschool them. What kind of fiction are you dealing with here? Is that still the situation?
Your Honor, there is virtually no oversight of homeschooling. However, in this matter, I believe that that's the beauty of the dispositional order. There's your oversight. There is the oversight for the homeschooling. It could be dictated that the court-appointed social worker could review the assignments or review the lessons that have been completed. But to answer your question, your initial question, you are absolutely right that there is precious little oversight to homeschooling besides filling out the DPI form.
Counsel, with regard to WISSTAT 120.12, which is the school board's duties, sub 18, and I'm going to read it and ask you how you interpret that. Sub 18 says the school board of a school district shall, 18, continuity of educational programming. I read this because this is a bridge between the juvenile justice system and the requirements of school board, and it references this bridge, continuity of educational programming. The school board shall coordinate and provide for continuity of educational program for pupils receiving educational services as a result of a court order under 938.347D, which is a juvenile adjudged delinquent, including but not limited to providing a report to the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction under 938 and the agency, which is required to submit an educational plan for the child under 938. The remainder of that statute is about requirements for the report. But, boy, it seemed, what am I missing there? Tell me your interpretation of that statute that obliges school boards to coordinate and provide for continuity of educational program, even though someone is a judge delinquent, or especially if someone is a judge delinquent.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think clearly the statutory language is important. What's not in the statutory language, I think, is equally as important. The legislature certainly could have eliminated continuity of, or simply stated that the district shall provide educational programming to a juvenile who's come under the jurisdiction of the court. They did not, however. They used specific language of continuity. It's the district's interpretation that that language evidences a clear intent that another agency may be providing the educational services. Therefore, the continuity between the school district and whatever agency is assigned by the court to provide those services. I think it's further important that the sole articulated manner by which a district could comply with 120.12.18 that is set forth in the statute is providing a report.
Yeah, but it says including but not limited to, so that's generally considered expansive language, including but not limited to.
So in addition, if we take the assertion that expulsion means cessation of educational services, I believe we have come to an impasse between 120.12.18 and 120.12.13, which is the 120.13, which is the expulsion statutes. It cannot be that a student is excluded from, kicked out, denied the benefit of, and also simultaneously continues in. Those are mutually exclusive terms. Therefore, I believe, based upon normal canons of statutory construction, that we do not read one statute to negate another. I believe if this is given the interpretation that the circuit court wishes it would have, that it would negate this expulsion statutes.
Counsel, couldn't it be, counsel, that the continuity referred to in the statute wouldn't just simply be a continuation of the order for expellment?
That certainly could be the case. It could be that continuity is after the student comes back.
It would almost strike one as discontinuous if the expellment order came through and then educational services were ordered by a circuit court in discontinuity of the educational plan, which has been heard by the independent examiner and who's weighed the best interests of the school district in comparison to the misconduct and misbehavior of the student.
It would be discontinuous to have a student, and in this case, the facts in this case, MDT was without educational services for a period of time, and therefore continuity would be the continuation of that based upon the plain reading of the statute.
Mr. Bell, Justice Bradley had not completed her question.
I'm sorry.
Your argument advanced seemed to me that you were, when you talked about this incongruity, that it was implicitly then defining expulsion from school as expulsion from educational opportunity as opposed to an environment. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the district's interpretation.
Because if you defined the word school in the statute to mean environment as opposed to educational opportunity, then there may be this kind of incongruity or inconsistency with regard to continuity. but if it means, if school means educational environment, then being expelled from a school building or educational environment, there still can be a continuity of educational programming, but just not within that environment. And then there's no incongruity. Am I right or am I wrong on that?
If expulsion is deemed to be just an exclusion from the building, the environment, then I think your interpretation would be correct. However, I again point out that that interpretation of expulsion or that definition of expulsion is not consistent with DPI or subsequent case law.
Thank you.
I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Meredith, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
I would like to dispose of two sort of housekeeping points before moving to what appears to be the central question, why are we here? So let me dispose of the two housekeeping points first. First, counsel indicated that the social service report recommended homeschooling. The report is contained as Exhibit 10. That is not an accurate statement of the report. The report recommended homeschooling only because the district wasn't providing any other alternatives, and that was the last best choice the social worker could do. Justice Ziegler, you had a question of whether you're rewarding people by giving them increased educational opportunities because they are subject to a juvenile dispositional order. I believe that it was rational for the legislature to say once sort of mischievous conduct moves into quasi-criminal conduct, judges should have increased authority both to sanction and to rehabilitate because it comes at a critical point. And in addition, the district's own brief indicates that children are generally expelled for things that also constitute violations of the Juvenile Justice Code, so the two are relatively in parity. But I would like to now go to what I believe are the two most important arguments. Why are we here? I think the argument expressed by counsel is that the school district has a right to expel a student, and we don't dispute that. Section 120.13 defines the school's power over a student. But the Juvenile Justice Code also gives judges power over schools. And so in this case, you're trying to harmonize the two. In fact, if one follows the district's logic, a judge has virtually no power at all to provide educational services to expelled students. But the district says no, the judge hangs up the phone, and that's all they can do. Under the interpretation offered by the court, the judge does have some authority. But as elaborated in greater detail on the brief, there are several benchmarks. The judge must be very careful not to offer education that does not take into account the district's legitimate concerns or education that is fundamentally inconsistent with an expulsion order. But our core point is the district's right to expel a student does not define a circuit court's power under the Juvenile Justice Code. And in fact, when the district's internal policies and procedures come in conflict with the judge's authority under the Juvenile Justice Code, I would suggest the policies and procedures are trumped by a judge's power. They should be harmonized, but if it's going to be who is the final decider, the circuit court, and I think that's quite clear in the statutes how much power the legislature intended circuit court judges to have. And that's also reflected in this court's jurisprudence under the very high standard, abuse of discretion standard, that they review dispositional orders. But the other reason why we're here is because I believe the school district simply doesn't trust circuit courts. I mean, they went through this parade of horrors that drug dealers will be roaming the schools and violent people will be readmitted. No circuit court would do that. Circuit courts deal with issues violence, of drug use, all the time. A judge is not going to order something that would clearly be an abuse of discretion. Judges have common
sense.
Doesn't
that argument kind of set aside a very material part of the procedural posture to this case? In other words, the order compelling the school district to provide these services came through a delinquency matter, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, the school district, was the school district a party to that matter?
The school district was invited at the show cause hearing to argue any reason why any problems with the judge's authority to order supplemental services. It chose to rely on only one reason. We have our policies and procedures. It offered no other evidence. And that's what it's difficult when people critique the judge.
So will there be, under your analysis, under your proposal, will there be litigation then where the school districts will be, as you use the word, invited, to come forward to the circuit court to argue each particular case as to the costs and benefits. I think of the disparity of funding and resources that are available to different school districts around the state. And I think of the impact of 10 a week on Dane County School District may be significantly different from some of our smaller, more rural school districts. So is that how it'll play out in your analysis of things, that the school districts will have to come in each delinquency case and argue why each individual case might be a burden to them and their justification for excluding the student, as well as the financial cost to the district?
Your Honor, I believe in most instances circuit courts are very reasonable people. Schools are very reasonable people.
Yeah, but the school districts might disagree with you in each particular case, and neither you nor I, as we sit here, can foresee every factual pattern. In other words, the answer to my question, I believe, is yes, that the school districts will have to come, if they disagree, they'll have to come to court and litigate the matter.
I believe this, in order to harmonize the statutes, the judge would have to allow a school district to present its concerns and then, using its discretion, fashion a remedy based on those concerns. Do I have time for a close, or should I just sit down? Any more questions?
You've already had your time, Mr. Meredith, so if that's okay.
Appreciate the court for all the questions and its time and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank Attorney Meredith and Attorney Bell for their arguments today in a case in an area which we haven't heard before, and we appreciate your briefs. And that ends the case of 09AP2845W, Madison Metropolitan School District versus Circuit Court for Dane County. We'll take a few minutes of recess so that we theoretically got another school coming in at 10:45.